We're live-ish.
We had discussed last week the topic of artificial insemination and all that comes with it. This week we go one step beyond. So artificial insemination, we said, had been around in humans since the 18th century. However, IVF was invented much later. For the two or three people here who aren't doctors, we'll just, fill you in on... Also, I should make an announcement that you can still eat Flachix tomorrow, despite whatever happens on the board.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Okay.
So,
afterwards. So, unlike artificial insemination, which is very low tech, IVF, in vitro fertilization, is very high tech. Basically, what happens is as follows. That a woman is born with all the eggs that she's going to have, and every month, around 20, 30 or so follicles spring up, which have the potential to be an egg. And based on the hormones, whichever one grows the quickest, sometimes two that grow the quickest, that's where non-identical twins comes from, right, become the egg, which gets released, which could potentially become fertilized. That's the basics. Using IVF, the process is a little bit different. First and foremost, through the use of hormones, the woman is caused to produce many more eggs than the usual one or two, something perhaps in the 10, 15, 20 area, right? At just the right time, the eggs are harvested. So now we have around 20 eggs from this woman. We then take them to a dating site known as a Petri dish, where we introduce them to 50,000 sperm or so, and we give them a little time together to see if things work out, right? A certain amount of those eggs will become fertilized. And eggs will be allowed to, the fertilized eggs will be allowed to split for 3 days, 5 days, depending on, I think they do five, they used to do 3 days, now they do 5 days, until you have a embryo of somewhat size, say 100 cells or so. Blastocyst. That's, and that gets transferred. They'll take two of them, three of them, into the woman, realizing that the likelihood is that they're not all going to implant. If they do all implant, she's pregnant with triplets. Two out of three ain't bad either. She'll have twins. If even one out of three, that's probably the best case scenario if it's one out of three. But in many cases, the majority still, the answer is zero out of three. And that's how it works. Now, there are many advantages to IVF. One advantage is it cuts out a lot of the processes. For example, if a woman has blocked fallopian tubes, that's the only way she's ever going to get pregnant. Right? So you're bypassing that part. Another plus is the fact that you can use it to see exactly the egg quality of the woman. Right? We can do hormonal tests, but to actually take a look at it, this is the only way you're going to do it. Unlike the man's sperm, which is easy to procure and easy to look like, women's eggs, not so much. So that is the process that happens here, and assuming that she produces more embryos than she needs, they will in all likelihood freeze those embryos, and in the event that this first go-around doesn't work, they'll have embryos for a second go-around. And even if this process does work, there'll be embryos around for another round if she wants to have children again later. So that's the basic overview of the process. Now, the first question that we have to ask is this allowed? Well, why wouldn't this be allowed? So according to the opinions that don't allow artificial insemination, this is clearly not better halachically. So we'll start off with a Tzitz Eliezer. If you remember from last week, Tzitz Eliezer of Waldenburg was one of the few who did not allow artificial insemination. So needless to say, he does not look kindly on in vitro. The reasons, again, I gave the first two paragraphs as sort of chazara from last week. He said the concerns are, he said that you have an issue of whether or not, in general, he says, let's skip to the second half of the first paragraph. As beina matirim also has romalachtios, nechako deis beim eizetzuros rahatirzos. He said, people who allow artificial insemination, there's a machokas as to when we allow it. Aleph, yeshem mamatim es habitzua rak bimei tarasa. There are people that only allow it when she's not anida. Beis, yeshem mamatim habitzua gam biyamim rivuna. Some people say that she's not a bleeding woman, but she's waiting, you know, counting her zayin nikiyim, that's allowed, but not when she's in actual anida. And then gil, b'mikri shalos, hata yesh rashkiyach b'sheva in said, in general, there is an issue that you have to be careful that the sperm that the doctors are putting into the woman is the husband's sperm.
How could you ever have a habit that you would do this when she's having menstrual flow?
You're saying medically?
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, that she would have to have a very short cycle.
I mean, that would be really unusual.
She would have to be under 20 days.
Yeah,
she's also sloughing off the lining of her uterus, so there's nowhere for it to attach if you do it.
Well, again,
she's bleeding.
It doesn't need to attach later on in the process.
So
implantation takes place a few days later. So
right.
If she's sloughing now, that doesn't make a difference, right? Right. Right now, it's just a matter of fertilization, different part of the anatomy. Right. But again, if a woman would have to have a pretty darn short cycle. Right. But you know, it's. Right. Right. Most cases are she's probably ovulating, right, during Yemei Livuna. That's probably what we said.
Do they harvest it at the time of ovulation, or can they just cut out part of the ovary, or what do they do?
The two different cases.
Artificial insemination.
Right, but by IVF it's at the time of ovulation. In fact, they control it very much. They'll give her a shot. What? I thought they do No, they use that to create eggs, but to cause the ovulation, they use something else. Like Clomid is very low tech. Pergonol, etc. All those. That's how we get 20 eggs. Clomid will give you 3-4. Pergonol can give you a good 20. But then I think she gets an HGH shot that causes the ovulation. I don't even play a doctor on TV, so I could be dead wrong.
So that means she's going to ovulate more eggs.
She's producing more eggs.
Right.
And then we want to make sure to be there when she ovulates to catch them all.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Right. When you the point where you know where ectomom comes from is a woman who gets these drugs.
Right.
But then they never harvest the eggs. They just tell her to go through a normal round of intercourse. And
so they didn't put those eggs in. I had the impression they did.
No. Nobody in their right mind will implant 8 embryos into a woman. Nobody out of their right mind will do it either. Nobody will do that.
I mean,
that's not where it comes from.
I thought the doctor was up for malpractice.
He's up for malpractice, telling her to go live normally after sending her out with 20 eggs.
I thought he'd implant.
Right, that was the malpractice.
Okay.
Right, so he goes through that. Second issue, the second paragraph, is we discuss whether there is familial relationships between the father and the child. Again, all the heterim, or a lot of heterim, is that this is a mitzvah of pururuvu. If the child's not going to be married to the father, you're not going to get pururuvu. So then he says, okay, that's putting that aside, but he said, the bottom line is, even if he was into artificial insemination, which he's not, he would be not into IVF. Why not? Because the concern of switching sperm in artificial insemination is not likely. However, switching embryos is a real possibility.
You mean a mistake?
Mistake or not a mistake? Why would there not be a mistake? There would not be a mistake because the CDC is in charge of this, of ranking the fertility centers as to the percentage of viable pregnancies that they come up with. Every year, at the end of the year, they come up with stats. As to, the following medical centers.
There was a case in this country where the doctor was arrested, isn't it?
Correct. He was helping matters along.
He was using his own sperm.
Right, so why was he doing that? Okay. So one of the reasons you do that is to get the... Here you have a male factor infertility, right? And therefore, you have problems with IVF. So you just take out the male factor. Now, there have been cases of white couples giving back birth to black children. That's more likely a mistake.
Right.
But there's two things. One is a mistake, And the other way is, you know, willfully switching something. You know, I have a couple that kind of looks like this couple, and she's become pregnant 4 times with her eggs, and she's got leftover frozen ones that she's not using. You know? These things can all happen. So he says, based on that, he says, unlike artificial insemination, which is a relatively quick process, in fact, you want to keep the sperm as fresh as possible, so you want it to be as quick as possible, IVF takes place over a long period of time, from the time of egg harvesting until the time of embryo implantation. There's a lot of time in there, in general. And if you're dealing with frozen embryos, there's a lot of time. Right? It could be a matter of years.
So call the home there. He's less open to that.
Right. So he says, that's why he's very not into it. Now, we probably reject his opinion when it comes to artificial insemination. So therefore, obviously, we have to take his opinion with IVF with a grain of salt as well, because this is based on an opinion that we rejected last week. What do other poskim say? So, Rav Avadi Yosef has a tshuva about it. Interestingly, I always edit these, obviously, but I decided to leave in the date on this one to get an idea.
Where are you?
I'm in number 2. So what's the year on this? It's of
78. 88.
You're right the first time.
78.
When was Louisa Brown born? The first test tube baby.
So it was
the
70s.
Right. Like 76, 77. So this tshuva was written shortly thereafter, right? This has got to be one of the first.
This is the English couple,
right?
Got it.
And that was the first case. So she had a birthday recently. She turned 40.
Happy birthday!
Something like that. She's up there. The doctor will have an answer shortly. He's checking with the experts at Google, I'm sure. So he gets the question that was already coming to provide. Nishalti oda zug nasui zeh shonim rabos. And he comes married for a long time. They haven't had any children. And the doctor said there's no way she can normally become pregnant.
This is incredibly hot off the press. She was born July 25th of 78. So he was probably asked the Shiloh days later.
Correct. We were doing so, but that means it was performed almost a year earlier.
Right.
So. Vimnesha chatzotzros shela. What are her chatzotzros?
Fallopian tubes.
Right.
I didn't hear the answer.
Fallopian tubes.
They look like
stumos.
They look like what?
Trumpets.
Stumos. They're blocked. Right? Ve'nazar shel bal yachol lachdor ha'beitzit shel ha'isha ha'for asa. Said the bottom line, she's blocked fallopian tubes. The sperm and the egg will never meet. They had to remove her eggs through a light surgery. Just gives you the basis of what IVF is. Because I'm sure in 78 most people didn't know. Then you put it back in there. That's it. 9 months later. Mazel tov. One is the child related to the father. They said, if this is the only possibility, what do we do? So, end of the tshuva, maskara de dina, bottom line. It's the same thing as artificial insemination. If there's no other option, Rav Avadya says you're allowed to do it. You have to be very, very careful to make sure it doesn't get switched. Right? And it'd be wonderful if you're using Orthodox doctors with someone watching it at all times. I see someone disagrees. I don't see why it should be usher. So Rav Avadya says it. However, he goes, He said they heard that other people allowed it as well. That made him happy. He said the bottom line is that in the event you have no other option, he would allow it, but it needs to be watched very carefully.
And the reason he wants to watch it very carefully is so that the offspring of this union doesn't wind up marrying an Arayos, because
correct.
We don't know who the
donor correct. Right. So again, that's now two questions which have to be posed based on this. Question number one is, what's considered dire need?
Well, you told us with Hannah, she felt like she was dead.
Was dire.
Right, that was dire. How about this case? Let's say there's two Tay-Sachs carriers that are married, and they want to undergo IVF, not because there's any fertility issue,
dire.
But they want to do a pre-implantation genetic diagnosis.
Because their risk is so high if they're both carriers.
25%.
25%. One out of four.
Pretty high.
Right. Now, this comes up an awful lot. You know, Tay-Sachs is the most popular one, but there are so many cases. It's so interesting. I remember one time I was at a couple's house, and they were telling us that their neighbors, it was such a miracle. What's the miracle? They had a Tay-Sachs baby. A few years later, they have triplets, and they're all healthy, not even carriers. A miracle! Yeah.
IVF miracle.
All right. It's a medical miracle. I'll put you down for that. But would that be considered a tremendous need? They can have children.
Wouldn't it also, I mean, you'd have to dispose of the other embryos.
We'll get to disposing of embryos. But again, in general, that's a general problem with IVF, is you end up with more embryos than you know what to do with. I think we mentioned that an earlier year that we recently passed a milestone here in America, 1 million frozen embryos in America. Right, so that's a biggie. So the question is, according to Rav Avadia, would he consider that? I remember I got a question one time. Cell phones are the wackiest things. I was in Chicago. It's going back a few years. I was buying a pair of shoes, and the phone rings. Cell phone. Hello, how are you? This guy's calling from Santiago, Chile.
Okay, right. Said, that's where they made the shoes you were buying.
He wants to know if I'm happy with my shoes. He wants me to know that the fruits are coming soon.
I get smart. Right.
So he says to me as follows. There's a couple in his community who had a baby girl. And then they had a second child, but the second child had some very rare disease. The child dies very young. And they've gone to experts, not only in South America, but in New York and in Belgium. And they have found out that this is related, it's just mother side, it's related to the egg. And the best technology today, all they can do is they can look at the eggs. They say some of the eggs are carriers. And the other ones, they can say, we don't know. So if they undergo IVF, they'll be able to eliminate
the positive ones.
Right, the positive ones.
For sure.
And therefore, they will have a better chance, but there's still a possibility. So should they adopt? Should they go forward with it? Should they potentially use donor eggs?
There's no halachic problem with adoption, is there?
What? There's no halachic problem with adoption. You're not going to be kind of provu, maybe, with it.
What if they use an egg? It's one woman, and she has somebody. She has a daughter, and they're developing to a man. And they get together.
Well, again, so you don't use a random one. You don't just pick one up on Craigslist. You know the woman who's giving the egg. So you know what the yichus is. To which I said, "Do these come in brown also?" It's just.
It's so rude.
So
do you consider that dire?
So according to Rav Avadia, that's the question. You know what is dire? Well, that's the issue that comes up. Now, not everyone.
The test of being married 10 years.
So again,
that's a halachic test, isn't it?
Correct. But here's the case that there's no fertility problem with the two Tay-Sachs carriers.
Right?
They could have many children, and some of them will be perfectly healthy. A quarter will be perfectly healthy. Half of them will be carriers,
and a quarter will be very sick.
Right. So, you know, there was a case in the New York Times a few years ago about Fanconi's anemia.
Yeah.
So it
also happened here in town.
So the case was that the only cure they know is a stem cell transplant from an exact match. And if they don't get it by the age of six, right? Right, so the idea is, can you undergo IVF and find the matching embryos in order to save the child?
On a six-year-old, you do IVF?
No, six-year-old.
Dermatologist.
Six-year-old was infected and the parents did IVF.
The embryo had a rash.
The embryo that
the
youngster was a stem cell donor for the older sibling.
Right.
It's
so,
an honest question.
Right. We don't mean to pick on you. So when you talk about a dire need, so again, when it comes to fertility, 10 years, there's a way. Again, if you know she's got blocked tubes, there's no sense in waiting 10 years. Right?
I mean, but that's the test usually used. Then you have to give a divorce.
So again, if you don't know what's going on, but if you know what the issue is, there's no sense in waiting the 10 years. Right? Nothing's going to happen. Right. So this dire need from a Vavadya, it really has a lot of questions. The second issue which should be discussed is...
You haven't answered the first question about the... Is it okay to...
Do the stem cell.
Do the artificial... Or to do the...
The pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, which is basically doing in all of these cases.
Yeah.
Right. So again, according to a Vavadya, I don't know. According to Rav Waldenberg, I know you can, because you can never do it.
Yeah.
And according to Rav Avadya, he gives us amorphous. That's what I'm just saying. That's why I can't really get a grip of it. You know, it has to be some sort of tzarach gadol, right? It has to be very... So I don't know how he defines that. The second issue is the issue
of... saying tzarach gadol just for the IVF, without any pre-implantation selection.
Right.
So
this is the IVF alone.
Yeah.
Correct.
Pre-implantation selection, the bar is going to be raised even higher.
Maybe yes, maybe no.
Because you can dispose of embryos.
Well, so again, whether I care about disposing embryos, we'll discuss that later. But again, if disposing embryos doesn't bother me, it's just as high. You know? And again, if I'm disposing of diseased embryos, if very early in the pregnancy a woman finds out that she has a Down's child, right, there are opinions that will allow an abortion. So if I would allow an abortion, for sure I would allow you to dispose of an embryo. What?
How early?
Maybe 40 days. Now 40 days is also tricky. How do you count those 40 days? But we'll get, let's hold off on that. We're going to do that's later on. But that's question number one. Question number two is this idea of the mashkiach. Right? Do you need a mashkiach in a fertility clinic?
Well, the rabbis seem extremely concerned about it. So,
correct.
Probably yes, we should have them.
But the question is, does Rav Moshe Feinstein's logic by Chol Yisrael apply here as well? Right? What's the logic by Chol Yisrael?
The government stands behind.
Right.
They want to lose their license. They're afraid of the government.
Right. That again, the government's a better mashkiach.
Yeah.
The mashkiach. I don't want to mention any organization, but then them. We'll just say that. Right, so that's why I personally am not machmir on Chol Yisrael, because if you try to put anything but cow milk into your milk, so I remember I once spoke to a very big fertility doctor, and I asked him about this. So he says, you know why I'm not going to mix it up? Because the first white couple that gives cover to a black kid, my business is over.
Finished.
Yeah, right. I'm selling peanuts at the bowl game. It's over for me right there and then. He said, my concern is not about anything else. He said, but, that being said, he said, I have a certain clientele, and therefore I have a mashkiach to make them happy. So if he asked, he said, I pay for it, I have it, but if he asked me, it's absolutely worthless, because I'm scared, a lot more scared of what would happen if I got it wrong than if I got caught. That's the least of my worries.
So I don't know where this fits in, but I'm hearkening back to your lecture on suicide. So where does the argument about letting God take care of this because your body is not your body, and we shouldn't be messing with this.
So you're saying that this is elective surgery?
Yeah, it is elective surgery.
So I'm not so sure that it's elective surgery.
Why not?
Because again, we pointed out that a person's psychological need for children is taken very seriously. So this isn't a nose job.
Life-saving surgery.
Right.
You have to look at it as life-saving surgery.
Would that be your argument then?
That would be my first argument here, yes.
Do you have a second argument?
The second argument is what's wrong with elective surgery.
Again, your body is not your body.
Well,
lots of things that aren't life-saving that are...
Right, so again, I'm not abusing my body by doing this.
It's not cosmetic surgery. No, I get that, but I'm saying, what happens that we're not leaving this in God's hands?
We don't believe in that. We believe in doctors. We think God wants us to be involved in the process.
Okay.
In terms of other opinions, I quote from the Nishmas Avram, a well-known modern sefer. This is Avram Steinberg. Some people have heard it. Says Shamati Me'agom of Yosef Shom Al Yosef Shrita. Not so much anymore. Shumati Tipo Ba IVF. But tonight she is Hashgacha Maleya Ach Rak Mibesos V'Zeru Shel Azivug. He allows it. Rav Yosef would allow it. Two caveats: one, it has to be Hashgacha, and two, no donor eggs, no donor sperm. That's number one. Ulav also ishtamis betrumas beitzis meisha zarah ki ein havdel ben beitzis meisha acheres lezera meisha acher. So he said that's it. You can't do that. Shemati me hagom rav shlomo zalman arba zatzal she ein shum chia bezucha shuch yiladim la avar tipul ba IVF kadei lekai mitzvah peruvlo. Shlomo zalman says there's definitely not a requirement to do this. If you don't have children, you can't actually have. You have a right to say, sorry, God. As far as we go,
it wasn't my doing.
Right. Now, Rav Vosner has a discussion here about whether or not you can violate Shabbos for this. Now, that comes up. In terms of IVF, timing is very important.
Crucial.
Right? As you said, you've got to hit everything, right? Every other day, sonograms are taken. And therefore, to find out exactly when the woman is ready to ovulate... Right, and together with a little help, you can time it very well to be there and ready to catch the eggs when they come down. What if this involves violation of Shabbos? Now, what type of violation are we talking about?
You have to go to the doctor's office to the hospital on Shabbos.
Right. So let's say she's within walking distance of the doctor, and the doctor's going to take a sonogram of her. Is that a violation of Shabbos?
No.
Well, probably not. Midoraisa for sure.
Part.
Well, not on her part, right?
Not on her part.
And if the doctor is not Jewish, good. He's not supposed to be keeping Shabbos. That works out well. But this is talking that the person would have to drive if something came up, etc. And if they don't go right now, the cycle will be lost. So he mesupak kvodu lefiza beinyan tino hamivchana asher kiyadua So yes, what about violating for the sake of Shabbos? Ledaiti boror, the gam bahag also lechal Shabbos v'zeh. So the question, the bahag says that if a woman is going to miscarry, you're allowed to save the fetus. You're allowed to violate Shabbos. He said that's to save a fetus, to save an egg or an embryo, not. So he says that he would not allow that. So that's the basics. So in general, the majority opinion does allow IVF, and there is some insistence on making sure the main difference between artificial insemination and IVF being it's a longer period of time. Some rabbanim require hashgachos. There are modern-day poskim who say no, that just like Chov Yisrael, there's a greater impetus for the person not to make a mistake than a mashgiach. This is even a better hashgacha. Now, of course, Rav Yashiv would not allow surrogacy. Other people do. And that, of course, raises the important question of, are you my mother? Meaning as follows, that there are two ways this could happen. When it comes to having children, men contribute very little throughout. They provide some genetic matter at the beginning, and that's the end of it for them. That's their entirety of help. What? They tear sheets, they boil water, they tell her to breathe, important things like that. They get out of the way, George, largely, if they're good at this. Right? However, when it comes to the woman, besides also providing genetic material, there's this other little thing that they do.
The heavy lifting.
Right. There's a little other thing they do for the next 9 months or so, when that is carrying of the baby. Now, when it comes to a woman with the new technologies, this can be split. You can have one woman provide the genetic material and another woman doing the heavy lifting, as the doctor says. So, for example, if a man is infertile, male factor infertility only comes in one flavor. Female factor infertility can come in two different flavors. Either she has inadequate eggs, or she has an inadequate uterus.
Right, mechanical issue.
Right. So either the problem is that she can't provide an egg.
The tubes.
What?
Or the tubes, where you can still use her own eggs.
Right.
And her own uterus.
Right. Okay, but we're talking here that but IVF can get around the tubes, it can't get around any of the other two. So in terms of that, so if a woman has a lovely uterus, but her eggs not so much, or lovely eggs, but her uterus not so much, then there are other options. So again, if a woman has an egg problem, there's a potential to get donor eggs. There's a lot of discussion about women who donate eggs, how much they should get paid, should we allow them to get paid? Was there any difference between donating eggs and donating a kidney? We allow you to pay for the eggs, not for the kidney. I remember when I was, when my wife and I were in Columbia, the Columbia Spectator, the local newspaper, had an ad in it that said looking for a woman 5'9 or taller, athletic, 1400 SAT, willing to pay $50,000 for a month of your eggs. As much as I tried to convince her.
But I got 1500.
Right. Right, so this is not out of the ordinary. So that these are actually, again, there's a standard amount, and then if you're looking for a particular type that's going to look like the wife, or maybe specifically don't want it to look like the wife, however it is, right? Then there, of course, is a high end market for these things. So the question is, what if a woman, in fact, has a fine uterus, but she has an egg problem, she gets donor eggs? That's one possibility. Or the opposite. A woman keeps on getting pregnant, but she's a serial miscarrier.
But in these opinions where it was Mutter, IVF, they mottered it. They said, but you can't.
That's
have
what Ravel Yoshev said that.
Right.
Ravel Yoshev. There was one opinion that said that we saw. But anyway, so Waldenberg said you can't do anything. Right, and then we saw El Yoshev who said, fine, but none
of
them.
It has to be the mother's egg and the father's egg.
That opens up the Pandora's box.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is.
The brothers, the sisters marrying, and so on.
I totally get you.
So the second possibility, right, we said is if the woman has fine eggs, but she has a problem with her uterus, you get what's called in Hebrew an Eim Pundakit. An Eim Pundakit, a motel mom. You know, you park the baby there for a few months. And then it comes out what we call a surrogate, right? The question is, who is the real mother? Is the mother the biological mother, or is the mother gestational
the
mother?
Genetic
mother. Right. Yeah. This question is a hot topic in halacha. It's a hot topic in the law. If people remember the case of Baby M, Baby M was a surrogate who decided, "I'm not giving you your child back.
I'm not giving up my baby." Is exactly what she said.
Right. And they signed a contract beforehand,
right.
And the contract was worthless because you cannot sign a contract to give away your baby.
Okay.
Right, so it was, and it became a cause célèbre as to who gets this child. So this is a major issue: defining motherhood. Is it gestational, etc. Now,
can I also ask you, is a Jewish woman allowed to donate eggs?
So. Just randomly?
Yeah.
So again, that will probably have to do with this question as well. If we assume there's no relationship between the biological mother, rather gestational as the mother,
yeah.
Who cares?
What's the difference between that and the similar cases of adoption?
Well, what do you mean? In adoption, you're clearly not the halachic parent.
You don't assume any of the parental allotment.
child. He's not a coin. He doesn't inherit. There's no inheritance.
Right. Right. So here, the question is, you know,
if he's not Jewish, he has to convert. So all these things don't happen with adoption.
Yes.
Is there a halachic difference between, in all these cases, the woman is married? Is there a difference between, because now it's becoming more prevalent, a single woman doing IVF? Is there a halachic difference?
Well, the issue with single women doing IVF is they're not really doing IVF, single women. They're doing artificial insemination. Right? So again, we're pretty sure who the mother is in this one.
Right,
so that's a different question. The question is,
where they're freezing their eggs.
Right, again, they're free, but they're going to freeze their eggs and they're going to use their eggs. The plan is.
But in the end, that will be.
But again, but in the end, the gestational and the genetic will be the same woman. Right, so this question doesn't come up in either of those cases.
With a surrogate, you have a biological.
A surrogate or donor eggs. Again, they're both two sides of the same coin.
Right.
Right. So that's the question. So, Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, Shlita, number 5, says, Dom Bishel, mi nechshavus le'im hanolad, harishona o ashniya? The first one or the second one?
Oshteya
nechshavus le'im hanolad. Maybe it's two mommies. But nafka mi nechharbe dine Torah. And there's a lot of cases. Ima vod osu b'achoso me'im harishon, o osu b'achoso me'im hasheni. Who's he related to? And if one of these women now has another child, right? Can he marry her? Oh, she also b'chos b'shemos. V'chein yesh risho im yorish avad. Right? To who does he inherit? V'chein yesh radim yorisho and toys to Yisrael. That's why she has nachris or havoc. One if one's Jewish and one's not Jewish. Im avad dino ki Yisrael o k'nachri. V'chein yorisho and toys to mipsule kal b'mam zeres v'chadome v'ashnir k'shera. Wait a second. Let's say a woman's a mam zeres. Right? What's she going to do? Her children be mam zeres. Well, maybe she can give her eggs. She can do IVF with her husband and have some other woman carry it. The kid's not a mamzer. Biologically, they're having children with no mamzerous problems.
That'd be a way to bypass the issue of what you have of the
Kalashem. Right?
I'm getting a little confused. Are we talking about both donor eggs and
surrogacy?
Carrying.
Yeah, it's the same question.
It's the same.
Two sides of the same coin.
It feels different to me because because donor eggs, as we talked about before, have no genetic connection to the mother.
Correct. And a surrogate has no genetic connection to the mother either.
Right, but
it's the same case.
No, but it's my egg that someone else is carrying.
Okay, and in the
and
case
I'm
of donor egg,
connected to that egg.
Okay, and again, so the donor is giving an egg that someone else is carrying.
Right.
Same thing. Hiya. Hiya.
No. The donor egg isn't my genetic material.
Correct. And therefore, and the egg that I'm giving is not the woman who's carrying it. Genetic material.
I understand, but as you colorfully put it, she's just the motel.
So when I get donor eggs, I'm just the motel. Not me personally, but...
She's saying, why do you even consider the fact that the motel should have any claim whatsoever to the...
Because it's hard to imagine a woman's lying there going to deliver a baby pops up and says, by the way, it's not related to you. I guess you understand why that's a difficult argument to make.
I understand that the surrogate is contributing to the health and energy and the growth of my genetic material. So
just like you are donating and helping to the donor's material.
But I can have this little baby in the NICU and provide nourishment and stuff like that. That doesn't mean it's my kid.
No, right. It doesn't.
So why is it different?
Because one's before it's born and the other's after it's born.
So you're saying that...
Once you're born, you can't change parents. You're stuck with them.
As a scientist,
too late.
as a scientist, it seems much more obvious that the genetic stuff would be... The stuff that we carry on,
maybe the process of carrying also contributes something.
But the baby's
going to look like me and mine.
You're right. Genetically, you are correct.
Yeah.
But who says that? The idea that a woman should give birth to a child and not be related to it. You understand why that raises an eyebrow at least.
Child comes out of the womb and you say it's not yours because it wasn't your egg.
I don't think
I agree with that.
9 months I've been carrying this child.
I agree with what you just said.
Right. You talk about worrying about the baby grown up and adult and marrying a sibling unknowingly.
Well, we know who the siblings
if
are.
If it's a donor egg, that's an issue. If it's my egg, it's not an issue.
Why not?
It's not an issue because genetically.
It's not an issue genetically.
But why not?
That's not the only issue.
I don't understand. Right.
Sort of it is. It feels very different. I'm telling you, it feels very different. That it's my egg that someone else is.
We'll throw this out to the doctors in the crowd, which is more than a few of them. Do you see any difference between the Shiloh involving a donor egg or a surrogate mother?
No, I don't.
It's two sides of the same coin.
The same thing. It's two ways of saying that one woman gave the genetic material. It's the exact same thing. It's just two ways of me saying it.
On the other hand, I do see a huge difference between the person who carries the.
Okay, that I get. You have strong feelings as to who the mother should be. That's what you're saying. Yeah. Okay.
I don't see them as the same. Different sides of the same coin. I really don't.
The doctors don't agree. Nor do the rabbis here.
I'd like to speak to a woman doctor. Thank you very much.
Yeah, can you call Marilyn?
Please.
Okay. Right, so that's and the questions go on and on, right? Can I get rid of Mamzeris this way? Right, my Ben Chai Bepidjan. Right.
What
about
Pidgin
that being? Translate that. That's
the last line. He's firstborn.
Yeah.
Right. He's a person.
Right.
Right.
Or whose Rechem is being
petered.
Right.
There you go. It's good. I have to figure out where you're going.
So if a surrogate carries.
The surrogate's pet, Rechem.
If a surrogate carries my egg, is it. I just don't know where to start. That's exactly what I hear right now. It's still a Kohen.
What?
I'm married to a Kohen. The surrogate's carried is no longer a Kohen.
So, no. Kohen has nothing to do with either of these women. However, in the case of Pidgin HaBein, it does matter. If
that,
it's
that
the
I
mother.
Understand.
So that's what it's talking about. It's not talking about what Aliyah the kid's going
to
get.
So since the Rambam was happy to accept Medrash as a source.
Yes, he was.
I'm vaguely recalling the Medrash about Rachel and Leah.
We're going to get to that. Hold that thought.
Okay.
So the question is, obviously the first question is, are you allowed to do this? Right, that's a question. So we'll just get a few of those. Armeli Hagon Rav Shmuel Halevi Vazer Shishu Daito Osser Midin Torah Ritzol Apura Kazos Rechachira. There's no way.
So Rav Goldberg never gave an answer. He just raised a lot of questions.
Correct. Correct.
Very Talmudic,
don't you think? That's again, there's a ... afterwards, you'll note.
So there is an answer at the end?
Right. So again, I just brought him down as the introduction, right? Because he really spells out a lot of the issues that are out there. And believe it or not, there are plenty more. Right? That's just, those are just the openings. So Rav Vosner is not into this at all. So Omnam Borli, Afa Pisha Lefi Anias Daiti, Ainbo Misa Vakaris. He said, to do something like this, to take one woman's egg or an embryo, put it into someone else's, that's wrong. Now, the person who sends him the Shiloh, interestingly, I didn't put the original Shiloh here, said he thinks that that it's Yehar Veliavor.
I don't know what that means.
That it's better to die than to do it. So he said, I think it's a little bit overstating.
He
does it now.
It's like committing murder.
Right.
Echein
Amrli Agon Rav Yoshev, the Daito also Raso Zoscha Chachilo. Vetam Shadover Goigrum Irbuvia. Yechshach Shivu Shem Shiyesh Heter Im Shtei Noshim Kach Mutu Yishamit Bezero Shol Macha.
He just said on the Chuba at the beginning of the page.
Right. So he's saying, of course, he has an IVF in general. He's not going to be more, what?
You just, source number three, he said, Shamati Ma'agon Rav Shlomit.
Right.
Right.
But this is talking about surrogates. No, this is surrogates.
Surrogate.
Okay. Surrogate does that. So he'll allow IVF, but he's not going to allow surrogacy. What if you did it anyhow? We told them not to do it, but now they did it. And we got a kid. We got to figure out what to do. Amri agon shlita she'omnav ein adayin hachra b'chol anosei ach nir she'isha yoledes He I am. So he disagreed with Andy, and he said that if he had to guess, he said there's no confirmation. He thinks it's the birth mother, the gestational mother, not the genetic biological mother.
That.
If she's not Jewish,
From a perspective, just to go back to what you were saying this minute ago, it does have, genetically, it does have technically the one who gave the eggs.
That's absolutely not. No one's denying that genetically that's the one who the mother is.
Right, so
this isn't the medical child. This is a halachic child.
Right. So according to that reasoning, if it's based on genetics, shouldn't that carry over to this case? Or that's what should determine who the mother is?
Why?
Genetically, everything else.
Who
does he have to give kibbutz
to? Who takes care of a kid?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying it as follows. In the event that a Jewish woman and a non-Jewish man have a child, who's the mother? The woman. Who's the father?
The man.
A non-Jewish man.
So halachically, the child has no father.
Halachically, yes.
Right. Even though biologically, you know, in the event I want a medical history, I'm going to ask about his dad.
But so how does that transfer to this?
So that transfers just because biologically someone's a parent doesn't mean that halachically they're a parent.
Okay.
That'll do it.
That I get.
Right. So therefore, yeah, I agree with you. Medically, there's no question who the mother is. And when I want to check out the medical history, I know who I'm going to ask about. But halachically, that doesn't have to follow at all.
Wait a minute.
Why would we halachically give this status to the...
So let's discuss in general what sources are out there.
So who are we saying is the mother?
So far, okay. Eliyashiv said he thinks it's the surrogate. And I believe there was a question that came up in Denver recently about a young man that was born through a surrogacy, and the biological mother was Jewish, and the surrogate was not Jewish. They wanted to do the bris, so they went to the Moel. And the Moel had to decide, what type of bris is this? Is this a bris of an eight-day-old Jewish child? Or is this a bris of a ger?
Is he doing the Shem Gerus to convert him?
Right? That's the question.
Whose mother? Who's the mother?
According to Rabbi Yosher, it's the Shem Gerus. I believe he called the first in Chicago, said the same thing.
Meaning the one who births the child.
Right. Meaning the child is not Jewish. That was the...
So you could have a wife of a Rosh Yeshiva giving her egg to a Gentile woman and she has a Goyish son.
Correct.
That's fine.
But according...
I'm telling you, it doesn't feel the same.
I could also take a Mamzeres and give her egg to a non-Jewish woman, and now she's got a biological child who's not a Mamzer.
That's
not
true.
Even a Jew, let alone... But when he converts, he's a Jew, not a Mamzer.
Right.
And there are other rabbinical authorities who beg to differ.
Yes, this is an area that I do not think that there's any agreement on at this point. Now, let me just give you some of the sources that are thrown out there. So there is an interesting question in Yevamos about a pregnant woman who converts.
Before she gives birth or after she gives birth?
Before, yeah.
Well, she's pregnant.
Sorry.
She's pregnant. So what is the status of the child?
No, based on what we're talking about, it's she births a Jewish child.
So
based on what you're saying.
So the Gemara says that the child is Jewish. The child does not need to go to the mikveh afterwards. So again, look at number 7. Amarava nachris mu'uberesh and misgaira, but not ein tzarech tvila. Now the question is, what does that say? There's two ways you can read this. And the Gemara, then the Tosos really brings back two possibilities. There's a kind of rather uber yerech emo. Do you see a embryo as a limb of the mother, or is it its own individual? In the event that you see the uber as a limb
just
of the
like
mother,
the leg becomes Jewish when she converts. The uber,
you jump in and your feet get wet and your arms get wet and your kidneys, they don't get wet, but you still have Yiddish kishkis when you come out, right? Right. So too, like all the other limbs became Jewish, so too this embryo became Jewish,
right,
and the child is born Jewish. The second possibility is the uber rav yerechimah. that it's not it's a separate entity. So why does it have to go to the mikveh? What?
We know that it is considered
a machlokas.
It's considered
a machlokas or uber yerachim. So the question is, so why, if that's the case, why does it have to go to the mikveh? So in general, we know when a man or woman goes to the mikveh, they can't be a chatzitza. They can't be a barrier. So let's say a woman had brain surgery. And now she has to wear something on her head.
Let's say she has a plate in her head.
She has a plate. Are we going to ask her to take it out before she goes to the mikveh?
No.
Now that's what really religious. Right? Right? No, we're not going to. Why not?
Because it's now part of her.
No, because it is now part of her.
It is part of her.
Correct. Right. What I'm saying is that anything that is necessary to keep the person alive is not a chatzitza. So the fetus has a life support system called the mother. Therefore, the mother is not a chatzitza. So even though it comes out dry, it doesn't have to. Now, what's the difference between these two approaches?
How could you expect the kid, the baby, to go to the mikvah? What would you do in a case like that?
I've converted 6-month-old babies.
What are you doing in a case like that?
You go to the mikvah.
Dunk them.
That's the easy part.
It's no worse than baptism.
What chatzitza?
Who owns them?
You said the father?
Throw them in if they swim.
If they're not, they're witches.
Right.
You guys are
it's the other way around, I think. Right. So
cavalier.
In fact, there was recently a case where I always had to go in.
Because?
I always had to bring a member of the basin. I always had to go into the mikveh and drop the kid. Because the father couldn't make it. You're not going to tell the mother to go in with it. So, if necessary, I told them, I'll do it.
Wait a minute, why wouldn't the mother go in with it?
What's she going to wear?
So you all have to
ta-da!
Stand there and watch it?
What?
Besdin has to.
No, I understand, but you can have someone else watch the baby go down.
What?
If it's her
the
baby. Din.
The Besdin.
What? Schwimmkleider.
Schwimmkleider.
Yeah, the Schwimmkleider. Yeah.
It's okay with that if you take it. That's okay with me.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Now I'm happy. I can sleep all
tonight.
You got to wear a Schwimmkleider too.
Yeah, my mind is Schwimmkleider. We wear Speedos.
Now there's a picture.
So.
Speedo.
So.
Can you see it?
So with so we're gonna have to edit this again.
Only wore speedos.
That's right.
Even for the omen.
So remember? What's the difference? So the difference is this child a convert or not? Right. So let's say at the age of 12, 13, majority the child decides they've had enough. So if I tell me say that uber yerech imo, too bad. Uber lab yerech imo is what to talk about. Right? Is the child related to the mother or not? Right? That has to do with uber yerechimo. There's a lot of nafkaminas. So one is, wait a second. This is the odd case of the child that's conceived by one woman and another woman gives birth. It's conceived by a non-Jewish woman, but it's given birth to by a
Jewish
woman. So is this child born Jewish or not?
Sounds like that they are born Jewish.
No, according to the first opinion, they're born Jewish. According to the second opinion, they're born non-Jewish.
You can't win for losing.
What?
You can't win for losing.
Right. So
there's always two opinions.
Whether or not he's
on
part
it.
Of the mother, just like her arm.
No, you always want if there are two opinions. You can just choose which one you want.
So this would seem to be a source that would be very relevant to our question, right? Whether these child born to the pregnant convert is considered a ger or not. By meaning, it doesn't matter. If you're born of Jewish women, you're Jewish. Or no, you have to be conceived of Jewish women to be Jewish. That is the question, right? This child was made from a non-Jewish egg, but a Jewish woman gave birth to it. So that would seem to be the first question. Gemara goes on to another case. What if a pregnant woman gives birth, she converts, and then gives birth to twins. Are they related?
The twins?
The twins.
Yeah.
If it's Yerachimo?
Yeah. And if not?
The Bohir, if it's not, if they're individual
if they're individuals separate from a part of the mother, they're still related. They're still related.
If you tell me that what matters is the genetic material, and these two children were conceived from non-Jewish eggs, or one Jewish egg, that's twin. Right? So then, if that's what matters, even though they're born as twins, they're not related if they convert.
They're no longer related.
If the important fact is the minute of birth,
and they're Jewish, and they are brothers. Now they're Jewish, but they're brothers. Even if, well, again, if a Goyish woman gives birth to identical twins and then they convert, they're not related. The brothers can marry each other in Colorado. Now all of the United States.
Now all over the country.
Right, now everywhere they can do it. America.
So is this still an unsettled question in terms of genetic
yes.
versus birthing?
Right. So I'm just saying that these are sources. These
Got
are
it.
The primary
yeah,
sources
yeah.
we're going to decide on. Okay. Yitzhak pointed to number 9, whether he knew it or not. The Targum Yonason, talking about the birth of Dina, he says, Umin basar kadein yaladet brat. And Leah, after that, she gave birth to a daughter. The Karat Yat Shema Dina. She called it Dina. Why? Aram Amart Dan Hu Min Kadam Hashem Di Yahavun Mani Pulga Shivtaya Bara Min Achel Achosi Yifko Trin Shvatim. So Dina was born after 10 children. They were born to Yaakov, 10 sons. Leah already had 6. Bilhah had 2. Zilpah had 2. They knew there'd be 12. There's only 2 left. Leah says, if I have another boy, maximum Rachel's going to have is 1. She won't even be as much as Bilhah and Zilpah. Hayavkin train shifted. Hayakvah the Nafka min Chadim in Amaasa. Vasham min Kodim Hashem Tzlusa. God heard my prayer. Tzlusa de Leah. The Ischalfu Uvraya b'meyayon. And the fetuses flipped. V'havi Yohiv Yosef v'me'ah d'rachel, v'dina b'ma'ah d'le'ah. And the Yosef, who started off in Leah, went to Rachel, and Dina, who started off in Rachel, what went to Leah. So.
Why couldn't it be that?
So what does that sound like?
Jacob just gave a Y.
What? Right.
Sounds
like the birth mother, because at the end of the day. Interesting, though, the Torah says the exact opposite. So the Torah points out that when they list off all the people, they list off a guy named Shaul ben Akananis. Who's the Shaul ben Akananis? Rashi says that when Shimon and Levi took care of Shem, after they go, they kill him, they say, okay, Dina, let's go. She says, I'm not going anywhere. Sugar, what do you mean not going anywhere? She said, you know, I was raped by this non-Jewish man. No one's ever going to marry me. Can't get a shidduch. I'm staying where I am. So Shimon says, I'll marry you. So wait a second. Are you allowed to do that? Shimon and Dina, not only did they have the same father, they also had the same mother. That's a real problem.
That's great.
That's problem, Marks. So the twins of Pirush are of Rum. Okay, one approach. That's the Ibn Ezra. Rashi, Pirish, Ben Dina, Shnivol, Kanani. No, Shimon married the daughter of Dina. Same father, same mother. It's allowed because she was really Leah's kid.
Rachel's
kid. No, thank you. So
from the same mother.
What?
So it wasn't on the same.
So, but everyone agrees.
That would argue for the genetic part.
Correct. So again, so even if the simple reading of the measure says that in fact it would be gestational, right? The Torah says the exact opposite. He says, you see, from there it's biological. Well, they couldn't have gotten married. So that's why this really.
So no one ever makes an argument that Yaakov gives a Y chromosome.
To who?
To Leah, which is how she has Dina. I mean, it's all in the father's. Chromosome.
No. What?
It would have been an X.
I'm sorry. No, why? He gives a.
That's all men got are exes.
No.
That's it.
But that's what I'm saying. The Dina.
No,
all women got exes.
All exes. Right. Right.
So I'm saying.
Right.
But in order to have a female.
Right. I understand.
It has to do with what the father gives to that egg.
So, but
no one ever makes that argument. Is what I'm saying to you.
What's the argument? I'm not catching.
Is that Yaakov is the one that. You know,
determines whether it's a boy or a girl?
Mm-hmm. And this time it's a girl, not a boy, after all these other
boys. Well, again, there's two children.
I understand. Is there no way to make that up, that another argument?
No, I don't see how that would work.
Well, I don't
know. Okay, what do we do now with the excess embryos? This is the stem cell question. This is the everything question. What happens with the embryos? So Moshe Feinstein has an opinion that's well known. We'll give you a line of it. Number 11, abortion is murder. This is the opinion of the Pope. This is the opinion of Reb Leich and Reb Moshe. I don't think that is the majority opinion.
Yes.
I don't think that abortion is murder, according to Halacha.
Well, how come, you know, the pasuk in the Torah where the fight goes on and then the pregnant woman gets hit and then it's not murder in that case? How
right.
Can
an embryo, frozen embryo.
I don't agree with that.
Right. So,
as long as it's frozen, it's not murder. It's alive.
What?
Alive but frozen.
Correct. No, I mean, frozen embryos.
And now when you thaw it and don't do anything, you've murdered it.
Correct. Well, again, so that's first thing is abortion in general. Right? Obviously, this is the idea of disposing of embryos is a subcategory of abortion.
Right.
Right? If abortion would be allowed, this would be allowed.
Is there any
right?
age limit as to when it's murder?
So one second. So again, so abortion in general, according to emotion, is murder. I don't think that's the majority opinion. Right? There are many other opinions as to what the problem is. The opinion that I think is the majority opinion is that it's chavala, maiming. Going back to the idea of that perhaps the child is a limb of the mother, we do not allow you to remove your own limbs.
We know from Gomorrah and Ezekiel that if a
Sanhedrin.
Woman... Sanhedrin. Yeah,
right.
Was it Sanhedrin?
Yeah.
If a woman damages, or if a man damages a woman and a baby, he's not high for murder.
That's a pasuk. That's what Dr. Klayman just said. Okay. Right, so in terms of that's a flat-out pasuk.
Why is an embryo outside the body that's never been in the body so, considered?
Wait, so we're not up to there. Savlanut vakasha. So that's one. Right? Point number two is based on a Gemara in Yevamos, which says that up until 40 days, an embryo is maya ba'alma. It doesn't have a status of a child yet. It's just considered
water.
Okay? So so that's point number two. So the question is, so there are many opinions that even if we do not allow abortion in general, we'd be much more lenient up until 40 days because it might not yet be considered
an embryo.
Now clearly, what we're talking about in frozen embryos, not considered a fetus, when we're talking about frozen embryos, it's less than 40 days. Right? So if you rely on that, if you assume that under 40 days it's not a problem abortion, this is okay. And also there's another major difference between a frozen embryo and a fetus in the first 40 days, and that is if I do nothing to the woman with the fetus, what will happen in 9 months?
The baby appears.
Right. If I do nothing to the frozen embryo,
nothing happens.
It remains a frozen embryo. Right? So again, one could argue that there is a difference between that. The most radical approach is to say that killing an embryo is murder. That opinion is held by only two people that I'm aware of. Rabbi Bleich holds that way, and the Pope. Those are, I guess we were the current Pope, but the Friedrich Pope. The Friedrich Pope definitely did. The Alta Pope.
The
Moshe says abortion is murder. That's that. Right. I don't know if he would go that far. Now, the status is very interesting. So it seems that yesterday, on Good Morning America, the following story appeared, number 13, about a couple, both Harvard-educated. So Mimi Lee is a doctor, and she also is a concert pianist, etc. Her husband, Stephen Findlay, is a works in finance, seems to do well for himself. When they got engaged, she was diagnosed with cancer, and there was a significant concern that the process would lead to infertility. So therefore, they took her eggs beforehand. They created frozen embryos. When you go to one of these clinics, there is some paperwork you have to fill out indicating what you want to happen in certain cases. Among the things that were written down was, in the event of divorce, what should happen? And they wrote down that it should be destroyed. The couple did get divorced, and Steve would like to have them destroyed, but she realizes this is her only chance at parenthood. Right? She's 46, she's sterile, and there are these. So right now in Superior Court in San Francisco, they are fighting this out. Right? It seems that there is a similar case going on with a woman named Sofia Vergara. People know who Sofia Vergara is?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
What? And you'll admit that in public.
Yes, I know who she is.
What?
I have no clue who she is.
She's on Modern
Family. She's the Hispanic lady.
She plays
the
very sexy wife
of the... Yeah. Oh, so it seems that she's the highest paid woman in television now.
And she
has a new movie out, Hot Pursuit. So after the 3 weeks, I recommend you have some fleishiks and stay at home. So maybe change the board, because they say not yummy yum. But... And it seems that she also has some frozen embryos, which she would like to dispose of, but her ex-fiancé would like to, in fact, have them. And this is a fight going on as well. So this is, I have not yet had the question. I asked the Basin, we've not had the question. But the issue of what to do with embryos in the event of divorce, that's a tough one. You know, do I have a right not to be a parent? Right? I've decided I don't want to be a parent, so you can't implant my genetic material in your body. On the other, if you tell me that destroying these things are murder, no, we're not going to even destroy it. But assuming that you're open to ideas like leave them where they are, etc., give them up for science, for research. I mean, logically, what happens when a couple reaches a point where they don't want their frozen embryos anymore? You can give them up for adoption. A couple can adopt it and implant it. We would probably not recommend that because of the issues of marrying relatives. So that's probably a bad idea. But in terms of giving it to science research or destroying it, if you assume it's not murder, that's fine. In fact, I was discussing this with Rabbi Willig a week or two ago, and he said, just passing it today. A couple came to me and they said, you know, we have them. We don't need them. So he said, stop paying the fees for freezing them. Let them do what they want. I just make it clear that they can't give it to anyone else to implant. As far as you're concerned, let it defrost. So that is a biggie.
I guess the side one. If you look at the pill,
mm-hmm.
that prevents implantation and prevents
it. You're not talking about the pill. You're talking about the morning after.
Yeah,
yeah. Stom pill is not that one.
So the question is that allowed then?
So the morning after pill,
yeah,
right, arguably would definitely be something that could be considered.
That
sounds like a firm commitment.
Well, it's a definite maybe.
Right.
I would tell you, it's no more murder than birth control.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's much more murder than an abortion. So again, in the event there is a case where there's a reason not to have this child, where I would allow birth control, if I would not allow birth control, I wouldn't allow the morning after pill. That's what I'm saying. As far as this is concerned, yes. But there are other issues out there. The last point that I'm just going to throw in here as it becomes relevant as well is it sits as a regarding pregnancy reduction.
Ooh, that's a big one. There are six babies going in there now.
Right.
Octomom.
And they're all going to die if you leave things alone.
maybe the mother
three
too.
Three or four of them are
right.
Rogan.
Right. Which ones, though?
Yeah, how do you decide? How do you pick which ones?
The Tzitzit is of the opinion. He writes here that he thinks that you can do pregnancy reduction. Anyone you want, you pick it out. I think what they do officially is doctors say, oh, this one looks, it's not looking as, it's not growing as well as the other ones. I think they usually lie. They just say to the mother should feel better, and that's nice. But I think that the idea is if they all look just as healthy, you have an absolute right to knock them out for the sake of the other ones. Right. In fact, the Tzitzit Ezra, the last line, after he signs his name, you'll see, is, Sipri ki es ha-shar ha-mura ho-chul ish-ol gam yedidi ha-gona gavil yoshiv ve-yishiv gam kim la-hatir. I was happy to hear that. So we do allow pregnancy reduction if you find yourself in that situation.
It's dangerous so, for everybody.
What?
It's dangerous for everybody.
Correct. At what point?
Including the mother.
Would how many would you reduce from five? Mm-hmm. Would you reduce from four?
It's a lot.
Would you reduce from three?
No, three max.
How did you come up with that?
Three is a lot.
Why not from two? What if they say they can't handle twins?
Look, if the mother can't handle two or three, no.
The mother can't handle it is one thing. Yeah. The issue is that the babies are rodent, one for the other.
Right. Well,
or they could be rodent for the mother too.
Max.
If she's gonna suffer by carrying five kids to term,
I imagine the size of the woman's pelvis might play a role in this.
Yeah.
Yes, there's that. But I'll have you know that when my wife was pregnant with one of our children, we went for a sonogram, and there was another woman having a sonogram, and she was there to reduce from 2 to 1.
Halachically, can you do that though, from 2 to 1?
Well,
she wasn't an MOT, as they say.
Yeah, but.
But what, do you know the details of why she wants it that?
She didn't want twins?
Member of tribe.
MOT is also.
Maybe it was too much.
MOT is also.
Right.
I mean,
what would be the criteria permitting this? Just to save the life of one of the embryos.
Correct.
But not to decide, I don't want boys, I only want girls, I only want girls.
So again, no one's going to do it in that case. But what they do, which is
pre-selection.
Pre-implantation genetic, I call it diagnosis. This is diagnosis being, you know, a girl, or diagnosis being a boy, whichever you don't want anymore. No. And, right, so that's far more problematic.
So when we were going through having twins, we learned in the high-risk OB clinic that anybody who has the implanted embryos has a more difficult pregnancy, and twins are going to be more difficult than a regular twins that came.
Well, I guess nobody here is in the air, but why is it more high-risk? Is it more high-risk because of that it was done somewhat unnaturally? Is it more high risk? It's because the people that go through the process probably have problems to start with. Right, that's the question.
All of the above.
You know, so that's...
Also, it's more stress on the body to have two
developing
embryos than one.
Right, that's true.
It's a higher risk pregnancy when you have two.
Absolutely.
It's even higher if you have three.
But it's not abnormal to have twins.
No, it happens, but it's a higher risk.
Right, okay, but assuming...
Fall into another category.
But everything else, all else being equal, you know, many twins have been born in the world where the majority, I imagine, are born where they're both healthy, you know they cognitively are up to speed.
I don't know the stats on that.
What's better, if you've got four or five?
Five.
Not giving the other three to surrogate mothers to carry.
You can't take them out. When they're in, they're in. That's it. That's not a scientific option at that point. This is really, believe it or not, you'll think I'm joking. This is the tip of the iceberg. The questions that are out there, I remember one time I was driving, actually from Yona Reese's wedding, I gave Michael Broyd a ride back to the city. Got married at the atrium. So in the car, some schmooze, I said, no, some chayse next to me. And in the back seat is Michael Broyd, his son, and Arthur Hyman, the dean of the Rebels Graduate School. Fascinating, right? So I said, so Michael, what are you up to now? So he says, you know, he's cloning. Oh, very nice. What else? He says, here's the issue. as we pointed out, legally, this is as big a nightmare as it is halachically. So he says that there's always this concern that when the court has a case of the surrogate versus the biological, on the one hand, you want the surrogate to give the kid back. On the other hand, let's say the woman who donated her eggs comes and demands her child. Right? So they've come up with the following idea. He said he doesn't know if this is true or not. There's a rumor that there are people in Italy where they're coming up with this technology where they can hormonally adjust a cow that it can carry a human embryo. So you take the human embryo, you put it in the cow, you let it cook there for 9 months, and then you do a C-section in China. So if you take a Jewish embryo and you put it in the cow, is it Jewish? Is it Jewish or is it fleshix? That's what it comes down to.
Also, it has, it's not a birthing mother, exactly.
What?
It's not a birthing mother.
Seriously, did that? It's a joke.
No. Europe's a crazy place, you know. Right? So
my mother's a cow.
You know.
The cow's not going to take you to court and say, I want to keep this baby.
On the other hand, most usually don't understand it, but this kid wants to be a vegetarian, I get it. You know? So.
But are there
what?
Well, that's no trauma to the
what if it was a horror duel?
Oh my God.
Right. So I'll tell you another case. Yeah. 1 week in the base, then two cases come forward. One is a case like this. The woman is a serial miscarrier. The doctors say we don't want to get involved with surrogacy unless it's a close, someone that we know is not going to fight it in court afterwards. And then we can guarantee that if it's a family member. So the husband's mother
says, I'll carry.
So is that allowed? Then a second person comes in, and the child is born with Turner syndrome.
What's Turner syndrome?
It's a genetic abnormality.
Which does what?
I think it's an XXY.
Because the Turners are born with no eggs. Because if you're born with no eggs, like a man who produces sperm throughout his life, a woman is born with all the eggs she's ever going to have. So if you're born with none, that's all she wrote.
Okay.
The woman who gives birth says, can I freeze my eggs and give it to my daughter as a chasen geshank? That afterwards, she'll be able to take her husband's sperm, and then she'll carry, and she'll have children. She'll give birth to children that are genetically similar to her.
Her child will be the grandchild.
Right. It's like load all over again. So what would you say about that case? And these
more
cases,
more complicated.
It's not getting easier. It's just not getting easier as it goes on. These doctors are making our lives miserable here in the Beis Din. So this is why this is very important. These are really, this is the basics. This is just a basic overview of the basics. And on the one hand, it's wonderful that scientifically this could happen. But I remind you that cloning is just another form of artificial reproductive technology. Right? Cloning is a way that you can just get around male factor, period. You don't even need the man.
That's right.
Right? The guy doesn't have any sperm, so give a cheek cell. There you go. Once you get to cloning, you basically wipe out male factor issues.
Right?
People are so scared of it, but that's all what it is, and that's going to raise its issues.
There's a difference there. There's no combination of genetic material. It's solely the material of one of the people.
Right, and now, of course, they are allowing in England to take an egg, suck out the genetic material of one woman, and put in genetic material of another woman. That can be done at this
point.
What's
the point of that? Just you use the genetic egg of the
because
other
a woman's got bad eggs,
right.
So I just borrow your shell. I fill it up myself, and we're good to go. Then I can be both the genetic and the gestational, even though I have no real quality eggs to talk of. Of course, you can have three mothers that way also.
Right.
You've got to be a little bit careful at that point because
of your mother's
day. Forget that. One day, there's going to be a person out there with three mother-in-laws.
You have to be a little bit careful there.
You have to go to the airport three times to celebrate.
The egg not only has regular DNA, but it also has mitochondrial DNA. Mm-hmm. So if you were to just take out the nucleus and the mitochondrial, or replace the nuclear DNA, you'd still have actually a vestige of DNA from the original carrier. And that actually, I mean, there are actually diseases that are caused by the mitochondrial DNA.
And the cheek cell has 46 chromosomes.
Right.
Sperm
but
cell
that
only has 23.
Mitochondrial DNA is different.
No, but I'm talking about using a cheek cell.
You're talking about cloning. He's on cloning.
I'm still on cloning.
No, he's on cloning. You're switching eggs. You're in different places.
Yeah. Well, he was on switching eggs. You're a little late. It's okay.
I'm always a little late.
Right. So, again, and these are just things that we're working on now. What's going to be in 10 years from now, I can't even begin to guess.
But it does raise an interesting problem. I mean, suppose you have DNA from one carrier, and you have nuclear DNA from one carrier and mitochondrial DNA from another carrier, genetically, you actually need to know both things because both are involved.
So what you're saying is that if there were someone who had a mitochondrial DNA transmitted disease,
yeah,
you could use that egg,
just
nuclear material, and inject it into another egg that has healthy mitochondria.
Yes, you could definitely do that.
Right. So, and again, that will just suggest, so if you hold the gestational, I don't care about this whole song and dance.
Right.
If you hold the genetic, as you seem to feel very strongly about, right?
I feel strongly
then you're going to have further problems down the road.
Yeah.
Right. So again, this is a vast world. It's and you know, there's hardly a rabbi who doesn't have these questions now. That's the bottom line.
And even the Moyle has these questions.
Right. And soon enough, the Sheikhin also. All right.
Thank you.
C-section through the next.
So, question for you. You say a lot of the reason to do this is because...